Our lesson in the Old Testament is 2 Kings 20, 21, and 22. And when I came to this, I wondered if I could find in Hezekiah, and I have always been fond of biographies, if I could find in Hezekiah a challenge to these graduates, which is also a challenge to me and everybody else. And I did very readily. And so I have called the lesson, or the message tonight, I have called it "The Tests of Life That Hezekiah Passed and Some That He Failed." The tests of life that Hezekiah passed and some that he failed. So we have a challenge in the life of Hezekiah, both in his virtues and his vices. It's very interesting how the inspired writers, in giving us biography, they always do it like the magicians used to do when they would hold up the empty hat or the empty box to show you for sure that it was very empty before they brought forth the rabbit or whatever it was they were going to bring out of the box. And so the Lord, in his biographies, has held up the human character with his vices and his virtues so we could see them together. Now, it's interesting that this man, Hezekiah, was the son of the most wicked king that Judah ever had, Ahaz. Ahaz came to power at 20. He ruled for 16 years, and he was the most wicked king that ever sat on the throne of Judah. Hezekiah was made to walk through the fire in heathen worship. And this man, his predecessor and father, also had gone back to the groves, worshipped the heathen gods, and had neglected the temple. They'd neglected the vessels in the temple, and they had plundered the riches of Judah. And so here is this man Hezekiah. He comes to the throne at 25 years of age, and he reigns for 39 years. Now, the first test that Hezekiah had is a test that every one of these graduates have. Hezekiah came to the throne in Judah when the spiritual life of Judah could not have been lower. He went into a wicked world. And if he would have listened, for example, to some of the modern psychologists, he would have said, of course, that this environment would be responsible for his life. And he would not be to blame for what happened to him, what he did, or what became of him. I am speaking of Freudism. But this man Hezekiah proves that God was right when he said he's no respecter of person. You are without excuse. He came to the throne, and the first thing he did was to have the temple cleansed, the temple of God, for worship. He ignored the groves. He pronounced a curse upon them. And he brought the vessels back. And he brought back the riches. And we read in a single line in the Chronicles, which is a counterpart to the revelation that we find here in Kings, that when the song of the Lord began, the sacrifice had started the song of the Lord. That there was a connection between your strength shall be in the joy of the Lord and the true worship in the temple. And so we find here this king doing this. Well, they had begun to worship the golden serpent, or the brazen serpent that had been since the days of Moses. And there was superstition about it. And so this man, Hezekiah, was not the meek and mild type. He saw this brazen serpent that one time had brought life out of death. Now it was bringing death to those who were living. And what did Hezekiah do about it? He said, now you've got to wean yourself away from this, from the wickedness of this present era. No. He pointed at that thing and he said, Nehushtan. He said, this is a thing of brass. Like you're going to have to look at the holy water of baptism and say, this is H2O. There's no salvation in this. And you're going to have to look at the sacraments and say, these are human works in which there's no salvation, not by works of righteousness which we have done, but according to his mercy he saved us. You won't graduate them out of it. They'll think that they're winning you over. And he called it a thing of brass. He was very clear-sighted and plain-spoken. He said, Nehusta, destroy it. He said, he was quick-acting. Pastor Jordan said to me last time he was here, he said, did you ever hear anything like this from your people? He says, one of my godly laymen says, you know, Pastor, I find it awful hard to defend you sometimes. He said, and I said, no, I haven't had anyone just that honest, I said, to say that. I shouldn't wonder, but what, there are plenty of them around here. They may be here by the score. I wouldn't doubt but what that might be true out here. It isn't perhaps just a Pennsylvania weakness, I said. And then I analyzed it with him. I said, but you know, I tell you, if there are such, I said, I've challenged them any time for any departure from the Word of God. And I said, I wouldn't want them to follow me because I'm the pastor or because of my office. And usually they don't. They'll keep still when you're being cut to ribbons, unless they have the Bible convictions that causes you to act and do like you do. If they've got those convictions, they won't be mute. They won't betray you by silence. Well, he said, it's true. And he says, the individual that told me this never fails to defend me, he said. And he said, before he ended the conversation, he said, it's a test of my own convictions, he said, when I have to defend you. And if this is reaching the ears of somebody that's been a little trembly, you know, a little bit of self-saving, someone that wishes that you had someone meek and mild, you know, or like a dead fish, you know, that can float downstream. It takes a live one to float upstream. You see? Now, here was this man who came into a wicked world, and you're going to be tested in your convictions, is what I'm saying. And usually people follow the people that kind of suit their pathway. You see? There'll be people that would never tolerate us because they don't have our convictions. But if they do have our convictions, they'll be very proud to defend our banner. You see? Very proud. But if they don't have our convictions, you can check them out because they won't last long. You see? They come, as the Lord said, they come in for a time. Now, notice in the second test that Hezekiah had, and that first one was bad. That was the biggest test of all. If he passed that, he usually gets by the next two. The next was over here on the borders with Sennacherib with a heathen army. And he had taken Samaria. They'd sieged it for 2 or 3 years. And when he saw this overwhelming army, he was afraid, very much afraid. In fact, he went into the temple and got the gold out and sent it as a peace offering to the heathen king. He went to his own palace and got the treasures of silver and gold and sent them as a peace offering to the king. And the same thing happens then that happens now. You cannot appease the demands of communism. No, no. The peace they want is a piece of Germany and a piece of Poland, and they want a piece of America, and they want a piece of Hungary. They want a piece of every country in the world, and they're going after it till they get it. As I said last Sunday, there's a world conspiracy on of communism. And you cannot appease the godless people of this world. There's no way. But poor old Hezekiah didn't know that. But when he had just about exhausted himself, he received a letter from this Sennacherib, this heathen king. And was that a strong letter? Well, it was as strong as old Khrushchev. You know, when he came over here and said, "We will bury you." It was something like that, about that sweet. And you know what Hezekiah did? Now, this kid, you see, started out very courageous. Lots of people have. Very courageous. He had a lot of courage. But the testing of his courage came when he saw great overwhelming armies on the border ready to sweep down and destroy him completely. And he began to try to make peace offerings. Then he woke up and he found out that this only made them more infuriated. So what happened? He got this letter. And this letter drove him to his knees, you see. And when he went to pray, he went up into the temple, and it says he laid it before the Lord in the temple. It's like he would have come up here on this platform, and there would be the outer court and the inner court, and then the holy place, and then the Holy of Holies. And he was up here ready to reach through the last curtain. He was within arm's reach of Jehovah's presence in that day, within arm's reach. And he cried out, he says, "O thou that dwellest between the cherubims, O thou that dwellest between the cherubims." In other words, he didn't lose his fear until his fear had driven him to his knees and he had it replaced with faith. And then perfect love casteth out fear. And thus he overcame. But he had one more test. And the test that comes out here is in the 20th chapter of 2 Kings. The order difference in Chronicles and Kings, but the lessons are all the same. And we read the story in 2 Kings 20 where he had the test of the dying hour. We're living in a day when people are telling us how much longer people live now than they used to. That is the average man. But when you go to figure averages of people, you don't find any 1 2/3 people, or you don't find any 2 1/2 people. They're whole people. And individuals seldom ever conform to universal averages, just as a statement of faith, of fact. Now, universal averages may tell us something, but it's just as true now as it's ever been. And I've been just rudely reminded of it in late years, that God said 70 years, if by reason of strength 80 years, and yet days, he said, might be full of trouble. But as one advances in the years, and you don't have to advance more than in the 8th grade to find that there are those who have not reached that distance. We have seen his test was the dying hour. The Lord told him. He said that he was through. He said he was going to turn to the wall and die. And we have seen Sunday school boys and girls who didn't survive illness, who didn't survive accidents. We've seen young people, and they're laid away in a funeral service, just the same as if they had been 80 years old. They didn't reach a law of average. And as I speak to 50 young people tonight who graduated, why, the law of average will say that some of you are likely not to reach that same day. The importance of the lesson is that we should be ready. And I want you to know how Isaiah pled, how he prayed. He said, "In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. And the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, came to him and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. Then he turned his face to the wall and prayed unto the Lord, saying, I beseech thee, O Lord, remember now how I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. And it came to pass, afore Isaiah was gone out into the middle court, that the word of the Lord came to him, saying, Turn again and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears. Behold, I will heal thee. On the third day thou shalt go up unto the house of the Lord. And as I've prayed many times for the sick, we know in our faith in the Bible and the Word of God that His power is always equal to His will in our lives. I don't believe any Christian that could pray this prayer where he said, I walk before thee in truth and with a perfect heart and have done that which is good in thy sight. I don't believe that any Christian that is walking with the Lord in the fullness of the Spirit will go to an untimely grave. He may go to his grave when he's young, he may go in his middle age, he may go when he's older. But he is under the government of a God whose power is equal to his will. And so at this time we find that he survived here again the test of the dying hour. Now, he survived three tests. One, the first test was the temptation of being wicked with a wicked world and being a compromiser and being a pussyfooter and of thinking, well, we can't be too straight-laced on this separation business. And he had a great chance to have been a compromiser, but he didn't. Now, in the second place, he had a chance to be afraid with overwhelming odds against him, but he wasn't afraid. God gave him courage. Now, the next place, he faced death. It would seem that this is the end of a great life, but it isn't. Because we find over in the Chronicles, we find summarized his mistakes, the tests he didn't pass. He passed the test of being in a wicked environment of ruthless and godless people, and he had every chance. Now, he had the most wicked father in Manasseh, a very wicked son, but he passed these three tests. Now I want you to turn, if you will, to the 32nd chapter of 2 Chronicles, and we'll here find more difficult tests than he had in the first three. They seem very simple as we look at them, but they're more difficult. And they're a pitfall for more people than the first three that Hezekiah passed. If you notice in the first place, beginning in the 24th verse, in those days Hezekiah was sick to the death and prayed unto the Lord, and he spake unto him, and he gave him a sign. Verse 24, 2 Chronicles 32. But Hezekiah rendered not again according to the benefit done unto him. Why? For his heart was lifted up. Therefore there was wrath upon him. Notice. And upon Judah and Jerusalem because of his heart being lifted up. In other words, he overrated himself. What this example says to tell you is you're not important. Don't go whining around. You're not important. God's no respecter of person. There's none of us that he couldn't replace. Not once, but a dozen times. And here's one whose heart was lifted up. He overrated himself. Like Paul writing to the Romans there, in that we often forget the deepest consecration that we find in Romans 12. And people usually quit quoting before they get down to it. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. It'd be a lot easier, though I give my body to be burned, Paul said to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 13. He said, but he said, let no man think more highly of himself than he ought to think. In other words, don't overrate yourself. You're not doing anything that he couldn't find 20 people to do. You're not important. God's no respecter of person. He said, and if your balloon is getting swelled up, he says, kind of puncture it. Kind of puncture your balloon. Now, he didn't pass the test. Well, isn't it something, a man that's sick, and Isaiah says you're going to die, Jehovah said so, and just because he prayed, look at what happened. Well, I must be somebody. I'm turning the power of heaven on, you see. His heart was lifted up. Very easy, isn't it? Oh, he spoiled all the wonders that he had accomplished. He just drew a line through them all. God had to set him aside. And not only for himself, But look what happened to Judah and to Jerusalem. And then read the latter part of this paragraph. This makes it, shows God mingles mercy with judgment. Notice he said, notwithstanding, notice, Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart. You know, I've said that before. Nobody can humble you. You might be humiliated a little bit, but that doesn't humble anybody. You can humiliate someone 1,000 times, but they got to humble themselves. Did you ever think of that? There's no place, I've heard proud people say, pray that God will keep me humble. And I've always felt, God, I pray you'll keep his mouth shut. Because that's a confession. When you ask someone, pray that someone will keep you, that God will keep you humble. That's unscriptural. You've got to humble yourself. You could be humiliated 1,000 times without learning a thing. You can humble yourself. But if you don't, you'll never be humble. That's a tremendous thing. Notice, after he'd sinned, he tried to correct it. Both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord came not upon him in the days of Hezekiah. In other words, God withheld his wrath and judgment on Jerusalem and Judea for the sake of the good the man had done. Now he failed in overrating himself. Now go down to the next paragraph. He had three virtues and he had three failures. Next one. And Hezekiah had exceeding much riches and honor. And he made himself treasures for silver and for gold and for precious stones and for spices and for shields, for all manner of pleasant jewels, storehouses also for the increase of corn and wine and oil, and stalls for all manner of beasts, and coats for flocks. Moreover, he provided him cities and possessions of flocks and herds in abundance, for God had given him substance very much. This same Hezekiah also stopped the upper watercourse of Gihon and brought it straight down to the west side of the city of David. And Hezekiah prospered in all his works. Some of us have passed through Hezekiah's tunnel. Saul was inaugurated, you may remember, at Spring Gihon. And in order, when the city was under siege of Jerusalem, he had a tunnel driven through solid rock from Spring Gihon to inside of the temple, right inside of the city of the temple square, so that they could get water from the Spring Gihon even in time of siege. And yet we read over in Revelation, thou sayest that thou art rich and increased with goods, and knowest not that thou art poor and wretched and miserable and naked, you see. In other words, here's one who overrated his possessions. Possessions got commonplace with him. And so it separated him from the vastness of the multitude. And we find he was overrating himself, then overrating his possessions. But this is still followed by another weakness that comes out. And it's as much expressed as implied. The third is. Hezekiah, in the 31st verse, if you'll notice it, it reads, howbeit in the business of the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, who sent unto him to inquire of the wonder that was done in the land. See? God left him to try him that he might know all that was in his heart. Now, he's overrated himself. He's overrated his possessions. And now God is leaving him on one more test. Is he going to overrate his ability? Is he or not? You know, Jesus made a lot of the talents. One is given one and five and ten. It didn't make any difference to the Lord whether they had one or five or ten. Just so they used it, they invested it. This is the sad thing. There's an old saying going around that there are so many chiefs and so few Indians. And why? Because one talent people don't feel that it makes any difference whether they invest their talent or not. But here was the one who was a 10-talent man. And the Lord says right out in this passage, he said, when people came to inquire of the wonders that he had done, my Hezekiah, you are somebody. He'd already overrated himself. Two, you sure have accumulated wealth. You're somebody. Three, and they'd come and and oh, and they say, how did you do it? What made it tick? Huh? And God tested him. You see, you find another passage here. We don't have time for it as the time is running out on us. But in the other passage, we find when they were down there, the enemy was down at the foot of Carmel, and they used to have those cloudbursts, really. We'd call them cloudbursts in our day, and sometimes the Lord would allow cloudbursts to come and sweep the armies away with the steel chariots while he'd let his people with less implements of war win. And in this instance, it says that the stars in their courses fought against Sisera. The stars in their courses. Like, for example, Winston Churchill, who was not what you would call not a pious man, or he made no pretense of piety. But he said there wasn't any question that when Dunkirk came, but what they had the most unusual weather that had ever been seen in the channel for such a period of time, because it had a cloud and a fog cover that enabled these many little skiffs and fishing boats and pleasure crafts and unseaworthy things that were carrying hundreds of thousands of these men across the channel in safety, when the Luftwaffe was swinging and droning overhead, watching for an opportunity that they might destroy them. And even Winston Churchill, what was it? In other words, God commands the forces of nature. And the stars in their courses fought against Sisera. And then we read that he says, cursed be Meroz, M-E-R-O-Z, cursed be Meroz, because they came not to the help of God's anointed. Cursed be Meroz. In other words, he pronounced a curse upon people because they would do nothing for his people in a time of great need. And here we find this man passed three wonderful tests, and he failed three. The last three are in the area particularly of the spiritual. He overrated him. First, he overrated himself. He didn't know he was nobody. He didn't know God. It's like that old story of the... I'm hearing my mother tell this story so many times about the man that had a dream, and they had an auction sale, and they were selling husbands, and so the story went on and on. It was a long story with a lot of detail, and my mother knew how to touch it up, and so anyway, he got to the critical part of the story. He thought he was impressing his wife a great deal. He said, now how do you think, he says, that this story ended when they came to auction me off? And she says, well, I presume, she says, by that time they would be wrapping your kind in the bundles of a dozen and selling them for a nickel. Now, if you get the point of that story, she was, of course, you see, there was a husband that wouldn't humble himself, but God had given him a wife to humble him. But it didn't work. She might have humiliated him. But if you get the point of the story, God could wrap the such as you and me up in bundles of a dozen and sell them for a nickel and replace any of us anytime he wants to. That's the lesson this is teaching.